Now, I know that you have trouble thinking about Mama because you told me this. You have trouble thinking about her without that song coming into your head.
No, that's
How's
you.
How's it go?
That's you, Dad.
Sing that song again? How's it?
That's you.
It's a famous song. I can't remember how it goes. Wait. Oh, wait. It goes, Mama, please be good to me.
Stop.
That's the one you always liked, right?
No.
I used to sing that to you when you were a little babe.
No.
No, but I'm sure everyone out there has trouble not thinking about the famous Oingo Boingo song, Mama. It's a deep cut from one of their albums. I don't know which one. You're just looking at me. Why are you just looking at me? Because you want me to sing more of this song.
No, I don't. Stop.
Seriously, every time I hear the term mama, I think about that stupid Oingo Boingo song. It is, by the way, everyone, it is steamy today, like in the house. We don't have air conditioning in this house.
Air conditioning.
Air conditioning is zero, is equivalent.
Why is that exactly?
Because it's expensive and it would cost a lot to install. We'd have to like actually tear open the walls and install pipes and ducts.
Worth it.
Whew. We usually only get like a few weeks of like really uncomfortable temperature and then it goes back to normal.
Yeah, not for me.
This house was built in a long time ago.
Not for me. You want to know why? Because my room is always 600 degrees.
I'm going to install an air conditioner in your room tonight.
Yep.
You'll be the only one with air conditioning.
Good.
Oh my gosh. But in any case, I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And
it's Del Toro time.
And it's Del Toro time. And what fantastic Del Toro movie are we discussing this week?
None of them.
None of the Del Toros. Not a one. But not even a movie that even appears on like a lot of like Del Toro lists.
Yeah. Like, but it's definitely a Del Toro-y movie.
It's definitely, I would go out on a limb to say it is definitely as much a Del Toro film as Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Don't mind me throwing my socks.
Yeah, just throw your shoes and socks anywhere you want in this house. You'll never notice them.
I'll pick them up later.
You'll never find them. I would say it's as much of a Del Toro film as any of the other ones because he kind of, well, he had a lot to do with this movie.
Yeah, it's obvious that he had a lot to do with this movie.
Even though, like, I would say like Don't Be Afraid of the Dark was really obviously a Del Toro movie, like,
yeah,
just from the way it was announced and advertised, and even like The Orphanage, you would be like, even though I would say probably The Orphanage had less of his hand in it, mm-hmm, maybe, but doing some reading and doing some research on this one, he had a lot to do with this movie.
It's pretty obvious,
yeah,
in my humble opinion.
So this is 2013's Mama, and it's directed by Andres Muschietti and written by Andres
Mozzarella.
He is a Spanish filmmaker from Spain. And his...
When you say Spanish filmmaker, I assume that person is from Spain.
Well, it's weird because I was thinking about that. When I was a kid, saying Spanish just meant Spanish language. So it could be from Mexico. So I get confused these days because even though now people generally say Spanish to mean Spain.
Hispanic is from a Spanish-speaking country. Spanish is from Spain.
As a Mexican growing up in Texas, I will tell you right now that saying Spanish was just a general term we used. But now it's pretty much means Spain. But I, even in my head, I still get like flipped around on that. But so Andres Muschietti and his sister, Barbara Muschietti, wrote the screenplay together. I'm probably mangling these names.
Oh, look, it's the cat.
But they also wrote it with Neil Cross, who is a television writer, and obviously Guillermo del Toro. So,
Lily, hello. Do you have something to say?
Do you have something to say about spooky ghosts? No. It was a 2-minute short film called Mama. It was just like basically a setup and a payoff for spookiness about little kids and their like relationship with this something called Mama. But he showed it to Del Toro and Del Toro was like, you know what? I want to help you get your career off the ground. Let's work on this film. And he worked on this film while he was working on Pacific Rim.
Del Toro doesn't have any spare time.
He does nothing by half measures. He actually borrowed, I guess, some props and sets from this movie in Pacific Rim. I guess he's like, yeah, I took it. It was a tree. And some hallways that I repainted because they were like filming like right up the street from each other.
I took a tree.
He took a tree. He repainted a tree. Remember all those trees in Pacific Rim?
No.
It was a really tree heavy movie. But no, so it was like a big, He said in an interview, he said that producing is like dating. So this movie was that's a weird thing. This movie is presented by Guillermo del Toro, mm-hmm. not just produced by him. He says producing is kind of like dating. Presenting is like a marriage. When you're presenting, you're really putting yourself forward to introduce another filmmaker to the world. So that was like his goal. He was like, this is a big deal, so I'm going to make sure
I'm not married and I don't date, so that means nothing to me.
I think what he means is like when he's just producing a film, it's sort of more of a casual relationship and he lets the filmmaker just do what they feel. But when he's presenting a new filmmaker to the world, he feels very responsible for making sure they put out the best product that really reflects.
So it's like a parental relationship and yeah. a friendship.
I don't know. It's weird. But he obviously feels like there's two different roles. I have a lot of... I don't really have a lot to say about Mama so much as I have a lot of questions to ask.
And a lot of feral children to talk about.
About Mama. So let's dive right into what is this weird 2013 horror film that seems to have come and gone without making much of a splash.
I can sum it up pretty well.
Sum it up.
I'm not going to do a rap. I didn't have time to write it.
Don't do a rap. Well, my name is Mama and I'm here to say I like moths. Coming out my mouth or something. Did moths come out of somebody's mouth?
No.
There's a lot of moths in this movie. But why don't you explain what this movie is about?
So, it's about these two children who were abandoned by their father. Not really abandoned. He was going to murder them.
Yes.
And he brought them out to this isolated cabin in the woods, which is always a bad thing.
Yeah.
So, he was about to kill one of the kids, and then this creature comes out and takes him somewhere. And we never see him again.
Yes.
Well, we do see him again. Just... as a different person.
Right. And then like, so in the, and he was played in both versions of, well, anyway, 5 years later.
5 years later, the uncle of the girls is still looking for them and has two guys that we don't ever find out who they're.
Yeah, you feel like there's been, he's been paying to have like search parties or something for like 5 years, search the area for these yeah. girls.
And they find this weird cabin in the woods and they go in. And there's these creepy little children monsters. Guess what?
It's them. And the creepy little children monsters, well, not monsters. They're feral children in the classical sense of the term.
And all they've eaten is cherries.
I didn't realize this until it was pointed out in an article I read. They've also been eating those moths for protein. So basically cherries and protein. Cherries and moths. It's a terrible name for a restaurant.
I have a question. Why didn't Mama kill the two guys that walked into our house?
We'll get to that at the end when we start asking these what if and whys and wherefore questions of this entire movie, which when you start picking it apart, well, it may make no sense, but it may make complete sense depending on how you look at it.
We already had this conversation in the car.
Right. And I have even more little points to make. And so we'll get into that. But let's just rush through this plot because it's kind of a simple-ish plot.
So they get back. They're treated by a psychiatrist for a few months. And then they go back and they live with their uncle and his girlfriend, who is the good stepmother again.
Yeah. And so just so you know, the uncle is played by, I don't know how to say his name, Nicolaj Coster. He's from Game of Thrones. He plays... Jaime Lannister in Game of Thrones. He's very handsome. He's a good actor.
Who else does he play in the movie?
What do you mean?
You told me that the dad and the uncle were played by the same person.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. Yeah, the father who was going to kill the little girls is played by him, and then the uncle is played by him as well.
Yeah.
And his girlfriend is played by Jessica Chastain, who's doing her best girl with a dragon tattoo impression. You get the feeling he's an artist and she's a musician, and they are not living the best life.
Well, not yet.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the psychiatrist gives... He basically, the psychiatrist makes a deal with him.
You want the girls? Live in this free house.
Yeah. Let me, like, examine... Like, let me have, like, full access to the girls to study, and I'll tweak things so that you get full custody of them. Because their aunt is also after them.
Which is, like, we never really learn why.
I think she just... It's one of those weird movie situations where this woman obviously just cares about them and wants them to be taken care of, and she has a good house and she's willing to take care of them, but we're supposed to be kind of like against her just because she's not... The cat is really upset about this movie. Because she's not the freewheeling, like, fun people that the main characters are. But in real life, she would have gotten the girls. But the psychiatrist is saying, like, it sort of tweaks things so that they get custody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll just ignore the cat.
So they move into this house weird stuff starts happening. The uncle falls down the stairs, quotation marks, and goes into a coma.
Yeah, we start getting the sense that there's a presence in the house. The girls, by the way, one is older than the other, and the older of the two girls is slowly coming back to civilization better. The younger of the two girls was only she wasn't even speaking when...
She was a baby.
She was barely out of babyhood when this all happened. So she is completely feral.
Yeah.
And the older of the two is feral, but she's regaining speech. She's being re-socialized because she was already a kid.
Yeah, she was five.
Yeah, when it happened. So,
she has glasses too.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a big plot point in the beginning of it.
It's also kind of a plot point in the middle, but I'll talk about that later.
Right. She loses her glasses in the very beginning, and I don't think she ever gets them back until she's given them back.
Yeah.
Which sort of explains you never really see this entity that's taking care of them because she can't see them. Which
No.
What do you mean?
During the movie, throughout the entire movie, whenever she's wearing her glasses and she sees Mama takes the glasses off of her.
Oh, right, right.
And I feel like that's part of why she can see Mama.
Mm-hmm.
Because she doesn't see what everyone else sees at that time.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. That's a good point. These two little girls, by the way, are
adorable
and really good. And there's a little fascinating background on the casting of them. They were originally going to cast two sisters. They thought it'd be best for just acting purposes, especially for kids that young, to actually be sisters. So they found two pairs of sisters that they narrowed it down to, and they actually ended up taking one from each pairing. The littlest girl did not speak any English. She only spoke French. She was a French-Canadian actress, or not even an actress. Her sister, though, is a pretty well-known child actor, so they were gonna pair them up, but they got rid of the well-known sister. They took another established actor, and so the director said, the Andres Muschietti said that he had to direct them differently because the established actor, the older girl, was he just directed her like an actor, and she mm-hmm. was great. She was amazing. The other one was not an actor and couldn't communicate with her very well, which actually served the character because she was supposed to be feral. They just kind of let her be this sort of rambunctious kid, and it actually ended up really well. I think the two little girls were
amazing,
phenomenal actors. So in any case, you were saying?
What was I saying?
Well, he got knocked down the stairs by this entity, which mm-hmm. came out of the wall. This crack opened up in the wall, and moths poured out, and then something pushed him down the stairs. He lands on his head.
He would be dead, IRL.
Or at least not coming out of that coma.
Or paralyzed from the neck down.
At least. It's a pretty brutal knockdown. In any case, he ends up in the coma. So she, his girlfriend, Jessica Chastain, who does not want kids, who wants to be in her rock band.
Oh, the movie, when we first meet the girlfriend, she's taking a pregnancy test.
Yes.
And she's like, oh, thank goodness it's negative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we know right off the bat she does not want kids. And her friends are like, ugh, you don't want kids. But
her friends are kind of jerks.
They move them into this beautiful big house to take care of the kids. So, but she's left taking care of these children by herself.
And she's like, I don't know how to do this and I don't want to do this.
And when we say they're feral, we mean the littlest one is constantly filthy. Snarls, crawls around on all fours, is like a classic feral child.
Also is really good at hiding.
Yeah, yeah, and climbing. And digitally enhanced to move as creepily as possible. So she's alone with these kids.
Mm-hmm.
And more creepiness keeps happening with this entity that they refer to as...
Mama.
Yeah. What else? This is where things in the middle, start becoming kind of generic haunted housey movie for a while.
Yeah, and then we find out that the therapist dude has been researching Mama for a long time.
Yeah.
And he has a baby corpse with him.
Yeah, so they start putting together, they start having dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Who has the dreams first? The husband is, or the boyfriend, the main guy is in his coma.
He has the first, no, she has the first dream, good stepmother does, because she has the first dream.
Yeah. And what was it about?
It was the dream where, or did she have the second dream?
I'm getting it screwed up. He has a dream that his brother's ghost, it's his brother, I guess, the one who was going to kill the little girls, comes to him and points
to
a bridge.
A wall.
Yeah.
He's underneath the bridge.
Under a bridge. And the lights and the computers in the hospital start flipping out, and the word mama, mama, mama appears everywhere.
and he almost dies.
Yeah, again. And then she has a dream.
She wakes up. The older child is standing in her doorway, and there's something under her bed.
And you think she wakes up from a dream, but then she wakes up from that dream. It's like this, like, nested dream.
Yeah.
She starts believing that there's something in the house with the kids. That the, mm-hmm. the kids are referring to something called Mama. The psychiatrist thinks it's just a product of their, like isolation, that they've created this, like, parental figure. So Annabelle, the girlfriend, is having this dream. And mm-hmm. in it, what happens?
Victoria is standing in the doorway. Mm-hmm. Victoria is the oldest child. And there's something under Annabelle's bed, and Annabelle freaks out. It's like, what is under my bed?
Right. And then she look under the bed?
No, we get a screen thing of under the bed, and there's Mama coming in up through the bed.
Oh, right, right, right. And let's describe Mama.
She has these long arms.
Yes.
These long, what appear to be broken. She's very Grudge.
Yeah, yeah. She's very Japanese ghost. She's like essentially in black and white.
Yeah.
And incredibly tall and, like, stretched out.
Yeah, but she has these, like, broken arms that she, like...
Yeah. So the Mama, the ghost, or the creature, is played by Javier Botet. I'm probably mangling his name, too. He's a Spanish actor. He has a condition called Marfan syndrome, which is where the joints in your body aren't... They're super loose. And, like, super stretched out, and that people who have it tend to be extremely tall and thin, and they have all kinds of, like, physical conditions. He's had, like, numerous surgeries throughout childhood in his life. He's 6.5 feet tall. He has a really long neck. His fingers really are very long. His arms and legs are very long. He's kind of the Spanish Doug Jones. His career started around in 2005 with the movie Wreck. Have you ever seen it?
No.
Spanish film. I'll have to show it to you one of these days. Okay. It's incredibly terrifying, where he played one of the creatures, and he's been in all the Wreck films. He's been in, God, I can't even think off the top of my head right now. There's numerous. Oh, he played the alien in Alien Covenant. He mo-capped that role because he's so tall and thin.
Which alien?
The one you just saw, the new one.
No, which alien did he play?
Oh, just I think the Xenomorph, the closest to the Xenomorph, okay, that you see. He's making a very big career out of playing monsters and creatures and creepy people. He was in The Conjuring 2, playing the Crooked Man. He's going to be in It. If I remember correctly, I think he's going to be in it. He's in Crimson Peak. So he's getting this career playing just all kinds of these sort of roles.
Is Duck Jones in Crimson Peak?
No, he's not. And so we have Javier Botet playing very similar types of roles. He's a very physical actor with, like, a very interesting physicality. And I find him fascinating. And just the fact that he's playing Mama, that is his physical build. Like, you're not seeing much as far as, like, digital manipulation. Like, he is a physically tall, gangly man.
Who can move his arms like that.
Who can move his arms so cool.
Kind of terrifying, though.
So they start having these dreams, and they find out that she takes the information to the psychiatrist. And long story short, you learn sort of a little backstory on who this Mama may in fact be.
Yeah. I'll tell the story.
Go ahead and tell this beautiful...
I'm telling it.
Tell this beautiful story.
So, he finds out first from a secretary in, like, the House of Records or something from the town that there was an asylum or a mental facility in the area years and years ago.
Yeah, like 100 years ago.
Yeah, that was shut down for some reason. We don't know why. And it was 5 miles away from where the girls stayed. And the story goes that this woman escaped from the institution and went to the area where they kept children, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And took her child back after stabbing a nun.
It was a baby. Like, it was a baby. Like a, yeah. A little newborn.
And she ran into the woods and jumped off a cliff.
Yeah, she's being pursued by the staff and whoever. And yeah, she got cornered on the cliff and jumped into the water. And you eventually see it sort of through her eyes.
Yeah.
Like, what happens. And she falls off the cliff, and on the way down, she hits a tree branch and then falls into the water. And that's kind of all you know at first.
Yeah.
So he's been investigating this. The psychiatrist eventually goes to visit the cabin and gets killed.
We think.
Whatever. He's attacked and removed from the plot by this entity.
Yeah.
And you also discover that these, like, sort of holes appear in the wall, and that they're like a link between the cabin and the house where the girls are living now.
Yeah.
And there's a scene with a little girl, Lily, who's the one who's the most connected to Mama. She's mm-hmm. the feral one. She goes outside in the middle of the night. And
she thinks Mama's coming.
Right. And this is kind of happening around the same time I think the psychiatrist is in the cabin.
Yeah, it is.
And because Mama is busy with him, Mama doesn't show up for her. She gets found the next morning
outside.
By Annabelle, like shivering outside. And there's this nice like moment between Annabelle and Lily.
It doesn't start out as nice.
No, it doesn't. Like she attacks Annabelle. But Annabelle like gives her tough love, like a lot of like tight hugs and warms her hands. And it's this really nice moment.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's really nice. It's a really nice
moment. Oh, and before this, Victoria and Annabelle have gotten a lot closer.
Because Victoria is the one who's the older one. Mm-hmm. So she's able to like develop these bonds between.
But she doesn't let Annabelle touch her. She says, because Mama gets jealous.
So we get this sense that there's this entity that's protective of the girls or possessive of the girls. Which is there's like a weird line between those two in the movie. And then doesn't want anyone else near the girls. Which, you know. Is obvious from what happens in the movie.
Yeah.
So people are starting to disappear or die.
Yeah. The aunt comes by at some point.
Yeah.
And she thinks that the kids are being abused.
Yeah. Because the kids have bruises on them, especially the little one. She ends up coming back to the house and
gets possessed by Mama.
She gets possessed by Mama in a strange turn of events and kidnaps the girls.
It might be because she was so protective of the girls that Mama felt like a kinship with her.
I guess. They.
But. When Mama possesses her, it goes awful.
Yeah, it's not a nice possession.
And there's this weird mark on Annabelle's neck.
Yeah, they never really explain that.
Yeah.
Annabelle gets kind of like this strange stain on the wall that the moths come out of. She kind of gets that on the back of her neck, but it doesn't go anywhere. Like, I thought
maybe it was so Mama could show her what happened through her eyes. Like, but, I don't know.
In any case, the girls get kidnapped by Mama and taken to the cabin.
Mm-hmm.
But the dream that the boyfriend had in the hospital guides him to
the bridge,
which he figures out. And
then he goes and does something.
No, he doesn't do anything. He just goes to the bridge.
And then it cuts.
And then she's trying to find the girls.
Yeah, so she knows where Mama has taken them.
So she goes, starts driving to the cabin. On the drive to the cabin, she just happens to run into Luke, who's wandering around in the middle of the street.
Weird scene.
It's weird. It's a really weird scene.
She, like, calls him and then hangs up, and then he, like, appears, and he's like, I got your message.
It's weird. Like, it's an odd scene. It doesn't, it's weird. To me, it felt like a reshoot. Like, they needed to bridge some scenes where they had cut a bunch of footage. Apparently, there is 40 minutes of footage from this movie that was excised.
I want to see it.
I've seen some of the deleted scenes. They're not that interesting. They explain a few extra things, but nothing that potent. But
they go to the cliff. The girls are at the cliff with the flowers in their hair.
So Mama's taking them to the cliff where she jumped.
Yeah.
Oh, we totally left out.
The baby bones.
Yeah, Annabelle breaks into the doctor's office at one point and steals all of his files and discovers...
Because he's gone.
Yeah, and she discovers he's writing a book about the girls, which is presented as like, dun, dun, dun. But I'm like, we kind of knew that, like that he was...
I thought he was writing a book about Mama.
Well, yeah, but like he's using the girls as like an investigative like crutch. Like that's what he's like. That's why he isolated them and put them in this house. So he could study them, I guess, even though we never really see him go over there.
No, we do. We see him go over there a couple of times.
But you would think, I don't know, this is part of the discussion for later on. It's the motivations are a little murky and we're supposed to like, I don't know. But in any case, she steals this baby corpse that he found.
Which is Mama's baby.
Yeah.
The reason Mama is the... way she, the supposed reason Mama is still a ghost is because she doesn't know what happened to her baby.
Yeah, she's still looking for her baby. And so Mama has the little girls on the cliff and she's going to jump off the cliff with them, we guess.
Mm-hmm.
And Annabelle presents her with the baby, which Mama takes, and she turns back into like regular human Mama.
Well, doesn't she stab the uncle first?
Yeah, yeah, she stabs him and he goes down. He doesn't die.
So while Mama's looking at the baby, she realizes that he's dead and throws it away. Yeah.
She's like, whatever. She throws the bones away. And that's when she wants to take the little girls. She was going to take them anyway, is what I think.
Yeah.
And then she doesn't want the bones. So she's still going to take them.
Yep. But Victoria doesn't want to go.
Right.
Lily does.
And that's what happens.
Yeah. She takes Lily. They jump off the cliff and they turn into moths.
And then that's the end.
Yep.
Oh, except we see a blue moth at the end that lands
on Victoria. And Victoria thinks it's Lily.
And then that's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
It's weird. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you start thinking about it.
If you start thinking about it as a ghost.
Right. So here's a few questions I have. So, okay, first, the first thing in the movie, the first thing we ever see in the movie is the words "once upon a time."
Yes.
Which immediately, if you're at all familiar with Del Toro's work or the expanded universe he's created, indicates we are in a
fairy tale
and not a
horror story.
Right. And I think that "once upon a time" is key to making this movie work. And it's subtle and it's quick and you forget about it if you don't remember it. So it's "once upon a time." We have, again, what links it. Okay, so I've said this on social media and I'm obsessed with this now. This is my new obsession, which is The Orphanage, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, and Mama are a rough trilogy that focus on several, that share several themes. One of the themes is stepmotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Not stepmotherhood, adoptive motherhood.
Yeah.
Because in The Orphanage, she's
an adopted mother.
Right. They adopted the son. They don't let him in on the secret. And
until
later. Yeah, and they're taking care of a kid who has HIV.
Mm-hmm.
He's got these special needs. He's got, or not special needs, much as extra needs.
Yeah.
From other kids. In Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, we have Katie Holmes, who is
stepmom.
Yeah.
Stepmom.
Or will be a stepmom. Yeah. But she is the stepmother figure.
Yeah.
Taking care of a little girl who has
really bad anxiety issues.
Yeah.
And
if not depression.
Yeah.
And so extra needs.
Mm-hmm.
And in this movie, we have
Annabelle.
Yep. Jessica Chastain, who is the
stepmother.
Yeah. The reluctant stepmother who is taking care of two little girls who are
feral.
Like and have developmental disabilities and or not disability so much as just developmental issues because they were raised by a monster in the woods. So there's these three movies that are about reluctant or not reluctant so much as
surrogate mothers who are thrown in.
Yeah.
Except for the orphanage, she wanted a kid.
She wanted a kid. They adopted the kid, but they're dealing with issues that she wasn't anticipating.
Yeah.
Specifically ghosts. In her own past, but it forms this rough trilogy of motherhood, but not traditional motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
They all the last two especially flip the wicked stepmother trope on its head.
Yeah.
They question the role of biological mothers in the sense that Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. In this one, the biological mother, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, is bad, not good.
Is awful.
And the biological mother in this one gets killed, but the surrogate biological mother is a weird creature that we don't understand. They are also about intrusions into our world of a supernatural presence, raising the question, well, let's go with my first question, which is Mama a ghost?
No.
Is Mama a ghost?
So we were talking about this in the car, and I came up with one theory.
Yeah.
Mama is a changeling.
Right.
A changeling is a creature that steals kids and replaces them with their own kids.
Mm-hmm.
Or just steals kids, depends on what you look at. And the reason I think this is, my dad brought this up, Mama doesn't care about the kid once it's dead.
Mm.
And also, the only corpse we ever see in this movie is the corpse of the aunt who was killed when Mama possessed her.
You're right.
We never really see anybody else die.
Yeah, we get sort of vague Hollywood-y neck breaks, maybe. But then once people are killed by Mama, we don't ever see their bodies.
Yeah, they're gone.
Yeah.
And then there's the whole dad dream situation.
Yeah.
Which was weird.
Yeah. Well, let's break it down. So if Mama's a ghost of just a distressed woman, possibly a woman with mental deficiencies or disabilities, it doesn't make any sense because she's way more powerful than a ghost.
And she's way more powerful than a poltergeist or a demon.
A, she's not tied to the location where she died.
Yeah.
She's not tied to the location where she was held captive as a patient.
She's also not tied to the reason she is still here.
She can jump between locations, but she needs some sort of portal to do it.
And she turns into moths.
Which are frequently a symbol of death. And she can possess other people, and she's completely physical. There's no intangibility to her. She touches, she grabs, she lifts.
And she can also put people to sleep.
So you have this presence who is presented as a spirit of a dead woman. But when you said changeling in the car the other day, I've been thinking about that so much because what if Mama isn't a ghost? I'm wondering if she is a stuck fairy. Like, who is trapped in our world. It was put in an asylum because she doesn't fit in this world. And mm-hmm. what did you do with people over 100 years ago when they didn't fit in? You put them in asylums. But she's still doing her changeling thing.
Yeah. Like, she's like, and maybe, I was thinking about it as well, like, maybe the baby was her baby, but she was planning on replacing another baby with that one.
Right. Or what if it just wasn't her baby? Like, what if she was just going through the fairy motions? Like, gotta steal a baby, gotta get away with the baby. And we know how Del Toro is with fairies and their rules. Like, what if she's just stuck in this endless loop of trying to fulfill her, yeah. like, fairy obligation?
Which may be why she was willing to leave Victoria behind. Mm. Here's my thing.
Okay.
Lily was a baby when she entered the house.
Yeah.
And Victoria was just her big sister. Now, changelings go after babies because babies can be easily replaced.
Right, right.
So I think that her main target was Lily the entire time. Mm. And Victoria just happened to be there. And she kind of got a connection with Victoria.
Yeah.
Like something.
Yeah, just from contact. Like, just she was yeah. there. And I wonder if, like, maybe she just relied on Victoria to, like, help out. Like,
yeah.
maybe, you know, it's just, it was, if Victoria hadn't been there. Okay, so this, well, let's keep going with these questions because these all sort of tie in. So what is the connection to the cabin? Why the cabin? It's not, someone pointed this out online, it's not an old cabin. It was like furnished in the 70s. Like, the furniture, everything is very, it's not contemporary, but it's not a cabin from the turn of the century. No. It's not an old cabin. It's a modern cabin. Whose was it? When did Mama appear there? Why is it furnished with modernish furniture? Why that cabin?
Maybe a family with a new baby went.
Oh, that's interesting. Hadn't thought about that. So maybe a family built the cabin in the woods, moved mm-hmm. in, had a baby there. Maybe the baby disappeared?
Maybe they all disappeared.
Okay, maybe the whole family disappeared. Why that cabin, though? Is it because it was so close to the...
I assume so. It was only five... Well, it wasn't even 5 miles. It was 5 miles away from the asylum, but the cliff was relatively close.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, because she ran there.
Yeah.
Without being caught. Yeah, I get a little confused on the geography. So we didn't say this in the beginning. The reason they ended up at the cabin was because the father kidnapped the two little girls after he killed their mother.
We never find out why.
We do. It's very briefly covered in the beginning. You have to be listening. There's like a news report that if you're not listening to it, you're going to miss it. He had like, it was all tied into the financial crisis that was literally occurring at the time this movie was made. He lost everything in this financial crisis. This huge deal went through. According to Del Toro, one version of the story had this whole thing tied in with his finances. Like the originally the doctor was trying to steal this money that had been misplaced or something. It went through all these permutations, the story did. If you see the interviews with them, this story was going all over the place before they kept reining it back in. Yeah, he lost everything in the financial collapse, and he killed a bunch of his coworkers. Then he went home and he shot his wife. He kidnaps the two little girls. He goes driving with them in the snow. They only end up at the cabin because he drives off a cliff and crashes in the woods.
He drives off a bridge.
It's a bridge, but it goes down.
It's the bridge.
An embankment. Right, right. But it's very vague. Like, what it has to do with the bridge, what it has to, like, if there's any tie with the bridge. I mean, obviously, ferries, bridges. Maybe there's a tie. Maybe that's a link to Worlds itself. But they end up just wandering through the woods until they find this cabin.
Yeah.
So
Victoria's glasses have broken at this point.
Yeah.
And she sees something in the window and she's like, Dad.
There's someone in the house. It's actually the whole scene where he's going to kill his kids is incredibly gripping. And as a father, I was on tenterhooks. I was like, nope, 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 nope. Because it's a very real thing that happens when people get panicked and in distress and depressed and kill their families.
He takes Victoria's glasses off and says, look out into the snow, and then puts a gun
to her head. To her head.
And then gets
taken by mama.
Taken by mama.
Well, so we don't really know whose cabin this was, but I like your theory that there was a family built it, moved in, and disappeared. No one found these little girls for 5 years. It's weird that no one found these little girls for 5 years, considering they were within walking distance of a bridge.
And there was a crashed car.
There was a crashed car.
That they found after 5 years.
After 5 years, even though, like, I would think that if you were, they knew where he would be heading, like, what road he'd be heading on.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you have known, oh, there's where that car went over the, I mean, I guess not. It's been 5 years, though, and this cabin isn't far from the woods.
And somehow that stuffed animal still has the girl's scent on it.
Yeah, they a tracking dog finds the girls.
I was so worried about the dogs throughout this entire movie.
There's a wiener dog in the movie that totally disappears. Did you notice that? There's this wiener dog they make a huge deal out of living with, and then it's just...
The dog lives.
I was told, we assume the dog disappears. Maybe it was taking my mama through her moth hole. We don't know. Don't ever say moth hole again.
Hey, you were the one who said it.
Who gave Annabelle and Lucas that house?
The doctor.
Where did he get this house?
I assume from his like boss or superiors or something. Well, he said that they had this house that was used to like keep an eye on like children.
I guess. That's not a thing, though. No. Like, literally, that's not a thing. It's so weird. Like, it's one of those... There's... After seeing how much, like when they were talking about how much this script was ping-ponged back and forth and written and rewritten and things were taken out, it shows in this final version. There's a lot of dangling threads in this movie. But not like big, like important, like glaring plot threads. Mm-hmm. Little things like this. Like, wait, you gave him a house? Like, there's things that could have been cleaned up more. Like, I don't think they had to be like disaffected artists. They could have just been a couple who didn't want kids. Like, and then already had a house and the kids move in with, like, little things like that.
Yeah.
They sort of bend themselves over backwards to justify plot points that I think didn't need to be justified. But in any case, we never hear about the mother again who was murdered. Just a little thing. But the older daughter never has to deal with the fact that, oh, yeah, and your mother's dead.
I assume she knows.
Yeah, but it's one of those things that bothered me. I was like, oh, if we're dealing with the world of fairy. Now, this, like I said, like your theory about her being a changeling and our theory about her being stuck trapped in the world of fairy makes a lot of these things, if not make sense, make a sort of sense, because we're dealing with the fact that fairies live by their own rules and do not understand the laws of human beings. And I love that. It works in Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. It works in Hellboy 2.
She's never really aggressive.
Except for when she pushes him down the stairs.
But she's only ever aggressive towards men.
Except for when she kills the aunt.
She wasn't being aggressive,
though. Well, I guess that's true. She does.
She only ever puts the women to sleep.
That's true. That's true.
She never tries to kill Annabelle.
Why doesn't she try to kill the hunters who come in, or the trackers who come and take the girls away?
Maybe she wants a link to the rest of the world?
Or something like, oh, and so one of the big questions is if she wants to take the girls back as changelings, or at least Lily, why didn't she do it when they first arrived at the cabin 5 years ago?
Maybe she wasn't able to.
Why not?
Maybe she needs some sort of link with the human world in order to be able to return to the land of fairy. Maybe she got trapped in the cabin or something after she threw herself off a cliff.
Yeah.
And... she didn't have anywhere to go.
Okay.
Because she can use portals.
Right.
Maybe she needs her marked children to be somewhere so she can use a portal to get there and regain her power to return to the land of fairy.
Okay. Then why was she able to jump off the cliff at the end and turn into a bunch of moths?
Because that's how she gets back to the land of fairy.
But how was she able to do that at that point? What I'm wondering if it had anything to do with the bones... the realization of the dead child.
Yeah.
Like if she had to close like rules of fairies dictate.
Maybe she wasn't even planning on taking them off the cliff with her originally.
Like maybe that's why she hadn't jumped yet. Like she was sort of stuck. Like I need to do this, but this contract hasn't been fulfilled yet. Like the original baby contract. And if the baby had been alive still or whatever, then she would have been like, oh, okay, thanks, and jumped off the cliff with the baby or taken the baby or whatever.
Yeah.
But instead, she's like, I can't do anything with these bones. Like, this isn't a thing anymore. Well,
contract's ended.
Contract is done. Like, that deal is done. I guess I can take these kids now.
Or this kid.
Well, I want to believe that she would have, because otherwise it sort of invalidates the whole, like, ending where, like, she doesn't take the older daughter. Like, to me, like, dramatically, she would have taken both girls, except that there's enough maternal instinct in her to let the older girl go.
Yeah.
Because she wasn't fully connected. But they did say in an interview that, though I like the way it's phrased, the older girl has memories of the real world and life in the city, like, because she was older. The other one is totally imprinted by the supernatural. She, Lily, as grudgingly as she makes a connection with Annabelle eventually in the story, Lily can never be human because she was literally raised by a fairy. And she will never fit into this world.
And Victoria's already going back to being human.
Yeah, yeah. Like, she was just... It's like when you live in the world of fairy and you kind of lose track of time, who you are, your identity. But then you come back to the world of humans and you're like, oh, okay. So if the cabin was kind of... Like you said, like, she was trapped in the cabin. Like, she couldn't leave until those
maybe
girls
maybe the cabin
got out.
Is the bridge to the fairyland.
Well, yeah, because that's where she creates the portals. I'm mm-hmm. wondering if, like... It was kind of this liminal space between worlds, like between our world and world of fairy, mm-hmm. where she had that power. She could bewitch these kids or whatever. Lily becomes completely an otherkin. Like, she's just this other
creature
now. Not human enough to stay in our world. Fairy enough to not
go to theirs
and not die when she jumps off the cliff.
Yeah.
She bursts into moths. And it is a nice moment at the end when they're falling off the cliff and they like, she realizes that she and Mama are connected at that point.
Like, yeah. She like wipes Mama's tears or whatever.
Yeah. 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 So I think that answers this question, which was, what was Mama's ultimate end game? Why doesn't she take the girls 5 years ago? I think we answered that. What's the deal with the moths?
Well, moths, like you said, represent death. I think that the moths are, well, a lot of like fae creatures like look like bugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've seen that in Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah. And I think that she, maybe the human eye can't comprehend the idea of this mystical world.
Mm-hmm.
So we make it seem like something else.
Right.
We cover it up. And maybe that's what the moths were, just the world representing itself so we could understand it. Because Mama and Lily are gone.
Yeah.
Like, we, like, I don't, they obviously didn't turn into moths.
Right.
So, yes. That would be lame.
An abundance of moths.
And maybe it's just a representation of their fairy form that we can see.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because the blue moth is Lily.
Yeah. We do see Lily eating moths earlier, which is gross. Are they fairy moths? Is she eating fairies? That'd be weird. Or are they just...
They're like manifestations of Mama's power.
Yeah. Or maybe like she can call moths as well. Like, she has control over moths.
That'd be lame.
That's a terrible superpower.
Actually, it would be pretty cool. You could just cover your enemies in moths.
I mean, I guess. I mean, it'd be terrible to happen to you. Also, I was going to say feral children. I actually have read a lot about feral children.
I thought you were going to say, I actually have feral children.
I actually have feral children. Dead. I'm sorry I never told you this before. They're in the attic. No. The film, so feral children, if you read about them, there's many, many, many legends of feral children. And most of them are erroneous at best, like whether or not they actually happened.
Yeah.
Because many of them are from the 1700s, 1800s, and their documentation is shaky. As far as like your traditional, like raised in the wilderness alone or by animals, you've got a lot of these stories raised by wolves, raised by birds, raised by monkeys. There's a lot of these questions. They're so old that we don't really know the veracity of
like
them.
Princess Mononoke.
Right. However, we do have many actual documentations of even the modern times of what we call feral children. I didn't want to go into that at all because 99.999% of the time, those children are the result of abuse, like severe abuse and isolation, like kids who are purposefully abused by parents locked in rooms, yada, yada, yada. Not fun talk for a Del Toro podcast, but they use, in this movie, they use the actual results of that in the characterization of these girls, which mm-hmm. is why I have to acknowledge it. Like, they, from what I've read, what I've seen, that's, they do a pretty good job at representing the way children behave when they are isolated and not given real human affection and are treated like this. And Mama is portrayed as, and Del Toro said, like, she was kind of a representation of bad mothers who turn affection into abuse, and how And we, in the way the girls look, they look like abused children. Like even later on, especially Lily, like she's filthy. She's covered in bruises.
And she doesn't like contact.
And she doesn't like contact. She's terrified of people who are not this overwhelming presence. But I, what I love about the movie, I like the way it marries the idea of the of real children who were the product of neglect and abuse. Well, I don't, you know, love that that happens, but I like the fact that they took that notion and they married it with the idea of the children left in the wild form of feral children, because Mama represents this really weird combination of abusive parenting and also being raised in the wilderness. Because she's this otherworldly creature, she doesn't know how to raise children, human children. She gives them cherries and moths. And she represents, if she's fairy, as we've talked about with Arthur Macken and all that stuff, she represents nature like this unknown.
She doesn't know human laws. Yeah, she follows like, her own. She doesn't know what people eat.
Yeah. So if Mama's not a human ghost, if she is an otherworldly creature,
mm-hmm.
call it fairy, call it fae, call it a changeling, call it what you will. This movie makes, discounting the plot weirdness and the stuff with the doctor and like where the aunt come from and why, all the legal stuff, the character stuff like that, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. To me, that's just like messy plotting. The fundamental ask, the fundamental like gist of the story, Mama and Everything, makes a billion times more sense. And actually, to me, becomes more scary because you're not dealing with just sad ghosts. You're dealing with trapped creature.
Who steals human children.
Who steals human children. You know, thought, so, I mean, we've been talking about this now for about 20 minutes. What are your feelings on our theory?
I like it. It makes the movie seem more, just more.
Yeah, and I love that Del Toro and his contemporaries have built up. Mama is sold as a ghost story. The Orphanage is sold as a ghost story. Don't Be Afraid of the Dark is sold as kind of a creepy creature gremlins-y movie. But they've built, so they've sort of secretly and subtly created this world of horror in mainstream entertainment that is actually
fantasy.
Fantasy, this elevation of fairy into our popular culture without us knowing it. And I think that's why these movies get discounted, because they're like, people are like, this isn't scary so much. It's just weird and doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah, because fairy is weird and doesn't make a lot of sense. And I kind of love that. I love this more than Fairy and Hellboy 2, not to harp on that, but because that's more cartoony than this, which is just visceral. Like,
nature is not friendly.
It's not friendly, especially when like you dig deep and scratch that surface and get lost in the woods. And I love the fact that the beginning of this movie is very Hansel and Gretel-y,
mm-hmm.
except the witch isn't keeping you alive to eat you. The witch is keeping you alive to fulfill some kind of weird contract. I don't know. I dig it. I dig it. I dig the whole like good stepmothers. I love the notion of parents who are thrown into it, just grabbing it by the reins and becoming heroes when they can.
Oh, we forgot to mention that Mama tries to put Annabelle to sleep at the end.
When did she do that?
When she's taking Victoria and Lily to the cliff.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Victoria's like, just go to sleep.
Go to sleep. She keeps saying that. Go to sleep. Go to sleep.
But Annabelle's having none of it.
Yeah.
She keeps waking up and dragging herself over back to Mama. And she grabs the Victoria's hand.
Yeah. Oh, she grabs the her sweater tie or her robe tie.
Which we see earlier.
Right, right. It's... There's some visual callbacks that are really nice at that point. Yeah, I love her. I love Katie Holmes' character in Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. Like, just how she just digs her heels in, broken leg and all, and, like, goes down those stairs. I love the mom in the orphanage who just throws her entire life into the flames in order to, like, save the spirits of these little kids. Like, I love these strong parental figures who... don't debase their own humanity. Don't give up who they are. They like sort of become more of who they are in order to save these lost souls. I think that's great. So yeah, like from that perspective, I think Mama's a definite thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
Like a weird thumbs up. Like you have to think about it thumbs up, but it's there thumbs up.
I think it's a thumbs up.
Yeah, and I want to see more of Javier Botet, our Mama himself. I want to see more of these the kids who played... the kids. And of course, we've seen plenty of Jessica Chastain and Nicholas, whatever his name is, the guy who plays the dad, because he's in everything. And we love it. We love it. We love it. We love it. We love it.
Yep.
Please be good to me, Mama. Oingo Boingo. It's good stuff. It's a good record. Good record, LP.
No.
So what is next on our list?
Is it The Strain?
The Strain. The pilot episode of The Strain, based on the novel by Guillermo del Toro and Chuck Hogan. He directed the opening pilot. I guess we'll be covering that one next.
And Crimson Peak.
And Crimson Peak.
And then Trollhunters.
And then Trollhunters.
And then whenever his new movie comes out.
And then whatever we got next on our plate, we got plenty of fun awaiting for you. But there's only one way to get that fun.
You have to show up when...
It's Del Toro time.